Welcome to a Monday episode of the Soccer Central Podcast. I'm John Molinaro, Chief Football Reporter for Sportsnet. Hope you all had a very lovely weekend across Canada. A busy week ahead in the Premier League as the title race heats up with Manchester City's visit to Liverpool. Plus, there's the semifinals of the FA Cup. James Sharman will be by later in the show to discuss that. But first, the UEFA Champions League returns this week with the second leg of the quarterfinals. Here to preview the slate of European games is Dan Riccio, host of the European Football Weekly podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and regular Sportsnet.ca contributor. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So listen, when you look at the four second leg matchups this week in the Champions League, for you, which is the most intriguing? Which one are you most looking forward to watching?
Well, I wasn't so intrigued about Bayern Munich, Manchester United, but now it seems like that might have a little bit more intrigue than we first thought, especially if Bayern doesn't score early and maybe put it away at the Allianz Arena this week. But I still think it's Atletico Madrid-Barcelona. With all that's going on with Barcelona and the title race going on in the middle of it with La Liga and Atletico surprisingly at the top of La Liga, that really just has all kinds of different angles that give it the most intrigue to me.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm of the same way. And I think just these two teams just play each other so close. I think it's like the last four or five times they've squared off, they've ended in a draw. So it's, yeah. I think it's probably, of the four, it's definitely the closest.
I definitely think it is. We know that Arda Turan and Diego Costa are injury worries right now for Atletico Madrid. Hopefully they can play and we can get to see these two sides play their best 11s up against each other. But Atletico, the way they play, they really just seem to have a way of stifling Barcelona's prolific offense. And I think that will continue no matter if Diego Costa is in the lineup or not, because they are just so well structured defensively under Diego Simeone that they seem to be a bad matchup for Barcelona in some ways.
So if Costa can't go, because he's doubtful right now, if he can't go, you don't think they lose that much at Atletico then?
I don't think they'll lose much defensively, and that's maybe not the worst thing because they already have the away goal, so they can live with a 0-0 draw. Now,
right. That's
obviously a lot to ask for playing up against Barcelona to keep them scoreless, but they've done it before, and having guys like David Villa and Raul Garcia who can play up top, they're not as good as Diego Costa certainly at this point, but they're still pretty good players.
Right. No, and they do set up in that counter-attacking style too, right?
Right.
So I think that probably loans itself well in terms of, you know, when you miss guys like Costa, up front, then and no question about it, it's a loss for them. But I don't think it does irreparable damages to their hopes in the second leg. Is the point I'm making, I guess?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And the one thing I will say, once Diego Costa did go out with a hamstring injury in last week's game, they did struggle to get a lot of traction going forward, I guess
right.
you could say. And the goal they did score was that, you know, absolute beauty from Diego, who just
out of nothing.
Out of nothing, exactly, from 40 yards out. So I wonder if they will be able to move forward offensively without Diego Costa as well.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that Costa, I mean, you know, because he holds up the ball so well. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? So, I mean, when you play a counter-attacking style, you really need that guy who can sort of hold up the ball and bring other players into the play. So if he can't go, I'll be quite interested to see what happens there. Barcelona injury problems as well. Gerard Piqué out, which means the center pack pairing is probably going to be Javier Mascherano and academy youngster Marc Bartra, who I thought did quite well last week.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know. What do you think of the loss of Piqué? And if they do have to go with that sort of defensive pairing, as I mentioned, can Barcelona sustain Atletico?
I think there's always questions about Barcelona's defense, I think, either way. It really comes down to Bartra. If he can play like he did last week, I think Barcelona should be okay. But this is a tough task going to the Vicente Calderon, where Atletico have not lost this season. So Barcelona, they have a lot of things to worry about. They're going to have to worry about scoring goals as well. And you just have to hope that Bartra can hold his own in the same way that he did last week. I don't know if it's a sure thing, and that's maybe something Atletico will definitely try to exploit. But if you're Barcelona, you just got to hope for the best if you're putting the young guy in there.
PSG holds a two-goal lead headed to Stamford Bridge after their 3-1 win last week in Paris over Chelsea. But they're going to be without Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's injured. How much is the absence of the Swede going to hurt the French club in this return leg, do you think?
It's obviously a bit of a blow because of who he is, maybe the third best player on the planet when you look at after you look at Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi right now. But at the same time, I almost feel like PSG might be better served without Zlatan Ibrahimovic, because I haven't watched a ton of PSG this year, but in Champions League games, I've seen them play the 4-3-3. And last week, Cavani was out on the wing, whereas Ibrahimovic was more the central point of attack. Now that Cavani can come in and play centrally, you can put the Brazilian Lucas Moura out on the right. You have Ezequiel Lavezzi out on the left. I think it makes them a better balanced squad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might be a bad thing for Chelsea that this balances out quite a bit, because Cavani, I felt, was a little bit lost out on the wing, and he may be better served to play centrally. And Lucas Moura, I mean, what more can you say about this young Brazilian? He seems to finally have found his feet in Europe, and we saw in his brief stint last week in the game after he came in for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he was quite good, and he can definitely cause Chelsea's defense some problems.
It's a big chance for Cavani, because as you said, he's often played out of position or out of his favored position when Ibrahimovic plays up top. Now he's going to be in that favored center forward role. So this is, there's a lot of pressure on him, but there's also a big opportunity for him.
For sure. And he obviously he and Lavezzi have a little bit of sour grapes to take up with Chelsea after the 2012 matchup with Napoli, right, where Napoli won the first leg 3-1 in the quarterfinal over Chelsea, and then Chelsea came back in the second leg at Stamford Bridge and won 4-1 with the goal coming from Branislav Ivanovic in extra time. So he and Lavezzi definitely still have some wounds to cover up, and they're going to want to put this one away early. So I think they both have tremendous motivation, whereas Chelsea has a lot to deal with from an injury perspective on their own side as well.
We're talking to Dan Riccio of the European Football Weekly here on the Soccer Central podcast. What did you make of Jose Mourinho's rather pointed comments last week after the PSG game, calling out his strikers and his defenders?
I almost felt he didn't even need to make the comment. I thought it was enough of a statement that he threw out Andre Schürrle at center forward, and it was clearly a statement to Roman Abramovich, I need a striker, because Andre Schürrle looked really out of place and certainly not his favorite position. And then the comments afterward just really added to that, because he clearly doesn't want Fernando Torres in that squad, and he wants a big-time striker back in the squad. So there's times when I wonder if he's going too far, and he tends to praise himself in victories and then, bash on his players when they lose.
Right.
And you wonder if the players will tune that out. We saw that definitely happen at Real Madrid. Will it happen with Chelsea, where he's a legend of the team pretty much? I don't know, and I don't think he's lost the team quite yet, but it's just one of those lines that he certainly seems to toe, and you wonder when he will cross it, because it seems to happen eventually at every place, every stop he's had.
The timing just seems weird, right? Because, I mean, for me, like, why would you public? It's one thing to do that in private in the locker room. That's fair enough, but I don't know. I question the logic behind doing that in public when, your club is already down 2 goals and you have to go back to London and get a result against one of the best teams in Europe.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? You have Samuel Eto'o, who's probably not going to be ready. He's trying to get ready for this match, but they say he's a race against fitness, as you would say. to be fit for this match. And Fernando Torres, what are you really going to get from him after these last few weeks where Mourinho has consistently bashed Fernando Torres, not maybe naming him per se, but kind of backhanded slaps towards Fernando Torres, not just after the loss last week, but also the loss to Crystal Palace the week before. So I just wonder what he's going to get out of Fernando Torres at this point. And you wonder, maybe he's got a tactical trick up his sleeve ahead of this match. But it's really going to come down to Eden Hazard and Oscar and Willian. These are the guys that have carried them this far this season. And really, that's what Chelsea has to hope for on this day again.
Well, I mean, I would think if Eto can go, if he's able to shake off this hamstring injury, then he'll start, right? Because I think he's been, of Chelsea's strikers, he's the most informed right now.
Yes.
But I mean, that's, who knows if he's going to be able to, if he's going to be fit. So if he can't go, I just wonder if he goes back to Torres and gives him one more shot. Or does he go? Does he try Schürrle again, who I quite like, to be honest, but not in that role that he used
yeah,
in last
exactly.
week. So it's an interesting sort of dilemma that he faces.
Yeah, and I think that the biggest thing that he dislikes about Torres is that he just seems to get lost sometimes in the game, and you don't really notice him that much. And at least Samueletto offers another outlet for players, and he can connect with players. Whereas Torres hasn't seemed to be doing that as much. And that was one of the points that Jose Mourinho made in his comments last week about Schürrle being another player that can play with the ball. Or paraphrasing, but he believed Schürrle was just a better player that fit into the team, whereas Torres just not fitting in from a team perspective right now.
I wonder, too, how much of it is a confidence thing, because it just seems like he's, I don't know, just really trying to do too much at times, and he's just trying to overcompensate.
Yeah.
So I wonder if a large part of this is mental.
I wonder if we're just giving him too much credit for how great he was.
Possibly.
Back in his Liverpool days. I mean, this is not something new with Torres. Pretty much ever since transfer, he's not been good enough. There's really no other way to put it. And it may be confidence. It may be that. But he's just simply not good enough anymore. Maybe his pace was very instrumental in the great years that he had with Liverpool. And he's certainly lost a step or two over the years now that he's gotten a little bit older. But he shouldn't have dropped off the map this much.
Not that much, no, exactly.
Yeah, he's still in the prime of his career, and I think that's what we all think of Fernando Torres, is that he should still be able to get to a certain level that's maybe close to what he was at Liverpool. But I think I'm done almost trying to think of Fernando Torres as the Fernando Torres of old. It's just he's not been good enough for too long of a period at this point.
Right. Real Madrid sits comfortably with a 3-0 lead over Borussia Dortmund. Any way back for the Germans in this one?
I don't think so. I mean, they put in a valiant effort, but they've really just too many injuries. And I wonder how many squads can keep up the way they have with all of the injuries they've had. One of the players that was so instrumental in their run to the Champions League final last year, I thought Ilkay Gundogan, he's not been able to play pretty much at all this season. And then you throw in an injury to Lewandowski and all the others that have been injured for this team. It's almost impossible to see them finding a way back at this point.
Manchester United did quite well to hold Bayern Munich to a 1-1 draw at Old Trafford last week.
Yeah.
How did they do it?
A vintage performance in defense from Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic, which is something we really haven't seen at all.
How often do we say that lately?
Yeah, we haven't been saying it much at all. And especially from Ferdinand, who's like really looked like he's ready for the retirement line this season, because he's just been dreadful for the most part. And that's really how they did it. They kept Bayern Munich's offense at bay. And really until Mario Mandzukic came into the match and offered Bayern kind of a target man, that they were really comfortable for most of it. And that's baffling to say, considering how awful Manchester United's defense has looked at times this season. And if they can continue to play on the counterattack. I mean, you think about last year under Sir Alex and the loss to Real Madrid in the round of 16. In that game, they were clearly not the most talented side in that tie. But Sir Alex Ferguson had them playing an incredible counterattacking style that would seem to be what was going to eventually win them the tie until that red card to Nani really ruined all of that. So if David Moyes can kind of replicate that almost, you might think that they have a chance. But this Bayern team, although they lost on the weekend, they really weren't playing anything close to their best 11. And I think this is really all Pep Guardiola is gearing up to now, as they've already wrapped up the Bundesliga title. So it's going to be really, really difficult for Manchester United. And I've heard some say, yes, they had one great performance in them, and that was it in that first leg. I don't think they can continue that into the second.
Do they do it again, though, like in terms of tactical approach? Do they set up to sort of contain German or to contain Bayern? Are they a little bit more adventurous because you know they've got a score because Bayern has the road goal? So I mean, tactically, how do they approach this? Do you think?
I think they have to start it off and play on that counterattack. That's really where Bayern is most vulnerable, because things have just been so easy for Bayern Munich this season. They seem to be able to score goals at will, especially in the Bundesliga, and they've done it at times as well in the Champions League. So you have to kind of play off that and hope that they maybe go for too much and you catch them on the break. It's a wonder if Wayne Rooney will be playing. And we've seen it. Juan Mata's kind of running into form now, and he may be able to be that guy who picks out a run that catches Bayern on the break. And that's, I think, how Manchester United is going to have to play it early. And then if they don't get something quickly, or they the game goes on and they still need that one goal, then you start to push forward when it starts getting towards the nitty-gritty at the end.
Bayern's going to be without Bastian Schweinsteiger and Javi Martinez through suspension. Can they overcome this? I mean, this is a team with great depth, so I wouldn't think, with all due respect to Schweinsteiger, he's a fantastic footballer. Martinez less so, but I would think that they should be able to withstand their absences, no?
I think so. I mean, they did not have Dante in the first match. He's been a big part of their central defense for this. So that's why Javi Martinez is not even a worry too much, because Dante will just slot in there in central defense alongside Jerome Boateng. And as far as the central midfield, yes, Schweinsteiger is a bit of a worry. Because he's the heart and soul of that midfield, and anytime you lose that player, that type of player, it becomes a little bit of a worry. But with Philipp Lahm and how great he's been in central midfield, and
fantastic,
Tony, you know, they still have Toni Kroos, and they can maybe slot in Thiago Alcantara. They have so many options. It's almost hard to see how that even bothers them at this point.
Dan, before we let you go, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can check out the European Football Weekly podcast.
Yeah, just at EFWSN590 on Twitter, or hit us up on sportsnet590.ca. Do a little search for European Football Weekly, or on iTunes, do the same thing, European Football Weekly. That's where you find it.
Who do you got lined up this week for guests?
We are trying to venture out and have Fernando Duarte on our Thursday show, which will be a Champions League wrap-up, and possibly a PSG guest as well.
Good stuff. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us, Dan. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Perfect. Thanks, John.
Pleased to be joined now by James Sharman, host of the Soccer Central television show here on Sportsnet. Sharms, what's going on?
Not much, mate. How you doing?
Good. Happy birthday, belatedly so.
Well, thank you very much. I survived the weekend, so that's always a good thing.
So, big 5-0 is...
Is 40 the new 50?
No, I think it's the new 30. That's what we're clinging to.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I turned 40 this year, too, so I'm...
Oh, did you really, eh?
Yeah, I feel your pain, so...
Yeah, and there's plenty of pain, isn't there?
Yeah, oh, more so. More so than ever.
What happened?
Getting out of bed is so hard now.
Isn't it? I know, mentally and physically.
Yes. Well, listen, a crazy weekend in the Premier League. Some contentious calls, too, in terms of offsides and penalty decisions. they already do goal line technology for controversial goals. Should there be instant replay for controversial decisions inside the box, do you think?
You know, it's such a hard one, isn't it? You know, we're seeing in MLS right now this guest theme of re-refereeing games afterwards, and they're rescinding all these cards after, you know, giving out cards or suspending players after they're not being sent off during the match. And, you know, it goes way too far. You take it to the Premier League and, you know, contentious calls. It's so hard being a referee nowadays, and I don't blame them. I know it's easy to blame the officials, but the game is so fast nowadays. Plus, the players are such great actors, and they're so devious and conniving that, you know, you understand why a referee might, you know, second-guess himself over and over again. I don't want to hold this game up and, you know, make it any slower than it already is, but there are certain times, I think, where it probably could come into effect and be dealt with quickly and correctly. You know, in particular, the offside for Man City, that was blatant. That would have taken all of about 6 seconds to see and to rule it off because they blatantly got it wrong. As for the Liverpool game, it'll be a little bit more difficult, I think, because, you know, the handball was probably a handball. Yeah, the assault on Mignolet, biased there, of course, but, you know, that it could have gone either way. I think it's pretty obvious to us and probably the listeners that, you know, he was fouled in the box by Andy Carroll, but to what extent? And then, of course, I guess that'd be another handball, right? And that was, I think, obvious too. So it's a grey area, isn't it? It really is. Blatant calls like offsides, yes. As far as fouls in the box, you know, and potential handballs, I think it's a bit murky, especially the fouls in the box, because the players, they dive so much now and they embellish so much. And even with the use of replay, it's not always that clear cut.
Yeah, and just regarding, you know, you mentioned Nasri's goal for City, which gave them the lead at the time, and mm-hmm. they never looked back after that. And afterwards, Saints manager Mauricio Pochettino, he said it killed the game.
Yeah,
fair?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think so. I thought Southampton were playing, you know, very well in that game. I thought they were doing their job. You know, I thought the scoreline in the end really, you know, was an unfair, you know, unfair scoreline for Southampton. But you go ahead against Man City, you know, you go ahead and the game does change completely. You change everything. You know, you have to now go for it. And I think in that regard, that was the killing goal. It really was. And it's a shame because it wasn't even close. It was about, what, 3 yards?
Oh, yeah, at least, yeah, 2 or 3 yards, yeah.
I mean, how was he? Was the linesman asleep? I don't know. So, you know, it's all very well saying, well, you know, these calls get evened up over the course of, you know, a game or a couple of games. That's what Sam Allardyce said, West Ham manager, after that match this weekend. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that when one team gets the edge, everything does change. When you're saying down goal to Man City, you've got to change your tactics, and that's what they had to do.
Yeah, I just don't know what the solution is, because I'm with you. I mean, I don't want to slow up the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the other hand, you know, I think there's a responsibility here to get these calls right, like especially
when
they're
fake now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
At the same time, the only reason we're seeing them now is because of the so many camera angles,
sure.
Right? And, you know, and there's so many replays, and it's played over and over in the highlight packs, you know, and you can't escape it. They've always been there, haven't they? And sometimes this part of me says, just it's not really broken. The game still works. We're still seeing great games. Yes, there's some injustices. There always have been, though. That is more, you know, obvious now because of the mediums, you know, that we can actually, you know, watch them and display them.
Right.
So, you know, I think overall the game's okay. It's like the whole thing about sin bins and this pink card, which
I think that's nonsense.
It's like we don't need that stuff. Yeah, people make mistakes. That's kind of the human element of sport, I suppose. But I know, and I understand that. But when you have the blatant calls blown, like the offside, is like, well, maybe at that point. So my answer is, I don't know, JMO.
Well, you're a rugby fan, right? I mean, it's my understanding that they have some sort of like instant replay, or they have some video official.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they review a lot there, and cricket as well, actually, as well.
So is there something that soccer can learn from that?
Well, I think that from rugby, the one thing they can learn from, the most important thing from rugby that soccer can learn from, is the rule that only the captain talks to the referee. You know, that should be implemented, because we still, I mean, I understand why players get angry and they surround the referee, and it's not as bad as maybe it was a couple of years ago now, but it's still pretty bad. And if you just make a rule that only the captain speaks, otherwise you get sanctioned, it makes for a much more enjoyable experience for everyone, I think, and it shows far more respect for the officials too. Obviously puts more weight on the captaincy as well, but that's what rugby, I think, is really good at right. I still find that, you know, although they've pretty much perfected the replay in rugby, they are very quick, it still does hold up quite a bit.
It does.
If you play rugby, trust me, you appreciate those breaks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because it's much more physically demanding.
Mm-hmm.
One of our favorite players, Jay Rodriguez, stretchered off the field with a knee injury and looks to be out long term. What does this mean for Southampton and perhaps from your perspective, more importantly, what does it mean for England this summer?
Yeah, well, I mean, for Southampton to start with, it doesn't mean that much. I mean, they're mid-table, right? And they're going to end mid-table. It's a real shame. That front three have been so good so far. He was having a breakout campaign. So it was a sad state of affairs. But, you know, they're still going to finish mid-table. They're not going to be going down. You know, 48 points, they're nice and safe right now. From the England standpoint, well, you know, does it give Jermaine Defoe the edge now? You know,
I would think so.
I wonder, because more of a similar player than, you know, an Andy Carroll. So if it's Rooney and Sturridge and Welbeck, and there's one more spot, maybe it's Defoe, unless, you know, Carroll keeps playing pretty well right now and he does offer something different. But if it was going to be Jay Rodriguez going, and that wasn't for sure, but
right.
I thought he was maybe having the slight edge there. I think it bodes well for Defoe if he stays healthy and gets back on the field.
We're talking to James Sharman of Soccer Central here on the Soccer Central podcast. The game I know you want to talk about, Liverpool. Big win at Upton Park over West Ham to finish the weekend top of the table. The Reds going to be hosting Man City at Anfield on Sunday in, I don't think I'm overstating it, a game that could go a long way to deciding the title race.
Yeah.
How do they match up? Who has the advantage here, Sharms?
Wow. I mean, if you asked me that question in August, it would be a pretty simple answer, right?
Sure.
It'd be Man City. There's talk about Aguero getting back for that one as well this weekend. They've missed him, obviously, and that would be huge for them. Player for player, it's still Man City, isn't it? You know, as simple as that. But we know that they are not a fantastic away team. They're far improved than what they were. But Anfield now is a fortress. They've been outstanding this season at home, Liverpool, and they are playing with more swagger and confidence than any team in the Premier League right now. So it's going to be one of those. I think it could be a fantastic match. Both teams like to play football. I don't think you're going to have either team sitting back in a shell and trying to defend and grind it out. This could be one of those classic high-scoring affairs. Who gets the edge? I mean, it's such a difficult one, isn't it? On present form, you see Liverpool, and as simple as that. But we're going to see a real test here. We see Liverpool, you know, walking over some of the, you know, the have-nots in recent weeks.
Right.
We've seen them play very well against some of the haves. The Spurs game in particular was probably the best performance of their season. And, of course, Manchester United. But, you know, their losses have come against some of the bigger clubs this year. So we're going to learn a lot from this team. Steven Gerrard says they are now, you know, pretty much the finished article. They have the attack and the clinical finishing up front. Their defense is playing really, really well. I thought it was very important to get Sakho back this weekend to play beside Martin Skrtel. He's still pretty raw, but they spent £18 million on this guy from France, and they see him as being, you know, their center back of the future. So he looked very good beside Skrtel on the weekend. So that's key. You know what? It's going to be a great match. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, I think it'll come down to being the title decider.
Does Brendan Rodgers, is he getting enough credit for this? I mean,
yeah.
You know, everyone is talking about potential managers of the year, and they bring up Tony Pulis, you know, for the incredible job that he's done at Crystal Palace. What's his name at Stoke?
Mark Hughes.
Mark Hughes, yeah.
Yep.
But it seems like Rodgers, who, when you think about what he's done with this Liverpool side.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Like, is he getting respect?
I think he's been, you know, looked down upon just because it's a big club, it's a giant club.
Right.
And you know, Mark Hughes at Stoke has done what people didn't think he could do. You know, he's got that team playing nice football and being a mid-table team. And many thought Mark Hughes, you know, wasn't a very good manager, but he's proven that he is. And Pulis is a great story. It really is. It's a wonderful story. But they're still, you know, they're still only, the 7 points from the drop zone. They should be fine. But, and you know, what he's done there is incredible. And they should survive this year. But you look at the improvement that Rodgers has done with Liverpool this season. No one picked them to be a contender.
No
one. You know, top four was the aim. Fourth place would have been amazing this year for this club. And not only has he got them, you know, contending for the championship, but playing a style of football that many people didn't think can win a championship. And they clearly can, you know, at this point. They are throwing that ball around. They're passing well. Defensively, there may have been some issues, but he seems to have sorted that out as well. And he's got some of these young players, Daniel Sturridge, Philippe Coutinho, you know, Raheem Sterling, having career seasons.
Henderson too.
And Jordan, that's probably the best example, Jordan Henderson, yeah. Plus, he was a guy that says, Luis Suarez, you're not leaving. You know, you're going to stay at this club.
Right.
I refuse to acquiesce to your demands. And, you know, that alone, you know, should have got him some votes. So there's some great managerial performances this season across the Prem. And I know, obviously, I'm biased. You know that. But
right.
I think it's very hard to say that he shouldn't be the man getting the gaffer of the year at this point. We'll see where they end up, right? But, I mean, they're going to finish top four.
Yeah.
If they finish second or even third, even then, I think you've got to say, well, that guy should get a lot of the votes.
No, I would agree, because I don't think any of us would have like predicted them finishing top four with all due respect.
It's style. It's the way they're playing. You know?
Yeah.
They're doing it the right way.
Yeah,
you know,
very attractive.
Football the way everyone wants to see it. And the fact that they are the neutral's favorite now, and I think it's fair to say they probably are. You know, out of the contending teams, the neutral out there wants to see them win because of the way they play. That alone, you know, speaks volumes for what he's done.
No, I would agree. Everton crushed Arsenal 3-0 at Goodison Park to move a point within the Gunners for fourth spot. And the Toffees, they have a game in hand as well.
Yeah.
Was Everton that good, or was Arsenal just bad, or was it a combination of both?
Yeah, a bit of both. You know, Arsenal remind me of the Leafs a little bit, you know. As a Leaf fan, I hate to say that, but, you know, these games which they've got to show up in, they just choke. You know, and they don't show the effort. And then again, that game, I mean, 3-0 may have glorified Everton a little bit, but they were by far the better team.
Sure.
They really were. You know, they played, again, a team that believes in themselves against a team that has no belief. And I've been backing, I know you're an Arsenal fan, Jim, and
yep.
I've been backing Wenger for years. And even I wrote about it, I think it was last week in the blog, how, you know, this might be the last time I write support Arsene Wenger, but you know they are actually improved this season compared to last season. But then they come out and put that performance in, and you think, wow, where is the leadership and the body language of Arsene Wenger on the bench? And if you see the way Everton have responded to losing a manager that had been there for over a decade, had done great things in David Moyes, they took a gamble on a young manager in Roberto Martinez, and it paid off really well. And now I'm beginning to somewhat sway to the fact that maybe Arsenal should look at what Everton has done, and maybe it's time to you know, say farewell to Arsene Wenger and bring in someone else, because it ain't working right now, whatever it is. But you give the Toffees credit, they are wonderful. I do fear, though, a little bit for Everton next season, you know, with those lone players. Lukaku's been just so important to them this season, and of course Gareth Barry.
Gareth Barry.
You know, Gareth Barry, you know, smart signings. It's very smart signings, but you know, you've got to make these things permanent because you want to see this team grow because they've been so key this year. But I think it'd be a fascinating team to study this offseason because they're close and they could finish fourth place. They've got a tough run in. They've got Sunderland coming up. Then it's Crystal Palace, United, Southampton, Man City, and then Hull. So, you know, it's not an easy run-in for them, is
no.
it? But like you said, they've got the game in hand on Arsenal, who have got an easier run-in, but it could go down to the wire. That could be a final weekend fourth-place battle.
Yeah, it should be interesting. What did you make of Norwich City's decision to fire manager Chris Hughton?
Yeah, you know, I wonder why they waited so long. I mean, they've been rumored for so many months, since really week one, right? It's been rumored.
Yeah.
It's Chris Hughton on the way out, and everyone likes him. He's apparently just a really solid guy, and he's gone through the ranks the right way. You know, he's a career assistant coach, and I think he's done some pretty good things in Norwich. He's proven that he can manage at this level. I think he was screwed over at Newcastle when he was there for that short stint. But at some point, you've got to say, okay, we are desperate at this point. We are desperate. 5 points away from the drop zone. And you look at their run-in. Okay,
it's tough.
They're at Fulham this weekend, which, you know, is crucial.
Huge
because
game.
They are the team below them directly. Then it's against Liverpool. Then it's at Manchester United, at Chelsea, against Arsenal. I think they're going down. And I think this is one of those. They're desperate. It's a panic move, but it's one of those that they hope to get that managerial new manager bump that a lot of teams see and maybe get a couple of points where they wouldn't ordinarily get them, because, man, right now it's not looking good, is it?
Well, I mean, and they better get that bump right away, because, you know, if I conceivably, if, you know, that Fulham game is huge, because I could very well see them, you know, losing those four games against Liverpool,
yeah,
against
too.
United, Chelsea and Arsenal. So they got to get something out of Fulham.
If they don't get 3 points against at Fulham, you know, and this is not a very good away team. In fact, it's a horrible away team.
Right.
Right. At Fulham, if they get 3 points, they're going down. Because I'm with you. I can't see them picking up anything in those next four games against teams, you know, two title contenders, a Man U team that's really improving right now,
right.
And at home as well, and against an Arsenal team that, like I said, it could be fighting for fourth place in the final day of the season, right? So it's basically the nightmare scenario for Norwich and the new manager. And it's funny, actually, because, I mean, today the ownership's saying all the right things, right? They're saying, oh, we will be in the Premier League next season. We will. As if it's, you know, they're cool.
Well,
you
know, we'll see.
They made a phone call. By the way, we accept our invitation next season, guys. Thank you. We'll be there next season.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Who are you trying to fool here?
Yeah,
you
it's know? A bit presumptuous, no?
It is,
I mean.
It? I mean, I don't know what else they can really say, but still, I mean,
sure.
We're not idiots here. Just say, oh, then we'll be there. I'm sure the fans are saying, oh, well, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm relieved.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has said, oh, okay, well, we're done then. You know, everything's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was a bit nerve-wracking. Glad we fired Houghton. Now we're going to survive.
Funny. You mentioned Fulham before. A huge win at Aston Villa on the weekend. It saw them climb to 18th, and they're 5 points from safety. They got to play Norwich City, so if they can get something against them, that's going to certainly bolster their chances. Was the Villa result a one-off? Is this a sign of things to come from the Cottagers? I know a couple of weeks ago you said you thought they were done, but
yeah.
Have you changed that position at all?
There's so many bad teams right now at that end of the table, right?
Right.
But you look at player to player, they're not a bad team, right? They're a team that I wouldn't think would be going down this season.
Right.
But they've been just, as you know, I mentioned, they ship goals. I mean, I think they've got the worst defense in the league right now. So, you know, getting a result against Villa, that's huge, obviously. But this Villa team is incredibly inconsistent, too. I'm not sure what they are either. You know, they've been
right.
very poor in recent weeks.
And they lost Benteke recently.
And they lost Benteke as well. So, you know, where are their goals going to come from? So, yeah, 5 points back of the safe zone right now, that's a lot.
Tough.
They are going to be relying on Norwich, aren't they? To you know, just,
yes.
You know, crash and burn. If Norwich does crash and burn, then they've got an opportunity. They really have. But they, as big as the 3 points are for Norwich, same goes for Fulham, right? That
Absolutely.
Is actually one to watch. That is a match to watch next weekend. It's going to be interesting because after that, they're at Spurs. Then against Hull, a team that's still not safe themselves. Against Stoke, at Stoke. Good luck with that. And then you're playing Crystal Palace final weekend, which the way Palace are playing right now, that they should be safe, but who knows? So I guess destiny's in their hands, that's for sure. But under Felix McGrath so far, it's taken a while, hasn't it, for them to show anything. But against Villa, I suppose, one goal against was a big success.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Leicester being promoted?
Yeah, I haven't really followed the Championship that closely. I like Leicester. They're a team that, you know, when I was growing up, they're always in the top flight.
Right.
I think they've done a nice job there. But as we saw, you know, this season it's very hard to maintain that push and stay in the Premier League. So all the fun begins then now. You look at, it's funny, I'm sure at some point, Jamie, we'll go back to our pre-season predictions. Right?
Right.
And I'm pretty sure most of us, and I did for sure, figured Hull's going straight back down, even with Steve Bruce, who I'm a big fan of. They've been a great story, right?
They
who
have,
knew?
Yeah.
I thought Cardiff were actually pretty decently placed to maybe, you know, it's going to be a tough battle, but maybe survive, and they're probably going down this season. So, you know, it's an interesting summer as to what they can do, and I'm sure they'll be studying these lower half teams right now in the Premier League and seeing what they did and what they did to survive, because it isn't really a blueprint per se of how you do it, but number one is get your defense in order.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be, you know, under a lot of pressure the minute you get into the Premier League.
Exactly. Sharms, before we let you go, maybe you can tell us what's coming up this week on Soccer Central Television Show.
Yeah, well, Champions League week, of course. So we'll be doing a lot of in-depth preview material and review material of those games. Bobby McMahon joins me on tonight's show. We'll look at the weekend action. We'll talk about Arsene Wenger actually a little bit there as well. And then look ahead to the Champions League. And yeah, it's going to be a busy, busy week as we get down to the wire. And I guess this time next week we'll be discussing who's in the final four in the Champions League.
That's true. And Friday's roundtable show? Anything planned
yep.
or no?
Not yet. No. I should probably get on that pretty soon.
Yeah, get on that, Slacker.
Yeah, I should do, yeah. it was pretty lovely last week, so it was a fun one.
Good stuff. Listen, James, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Jamie, anytime, mate.
Cheers. Just a reminder that you can watch all four of this week's UEFA Champions League quarterfinal second leg matches live on Sportsnet. On Tuesday at 2:30 Eastern, watch Chelsea versus PSG on the four main Sportsnet channels, and Borussia Dortmund versus Real Madrid on Sportsnet World. On Wednesday at 2:30 Eastern, watch Bayern Munich versus Manchester United on the Sportsnet main channels and Atletico Madrid versus Barcelona on Sportsnet World. Also on Thursday, Sportsnet will be showing all four UEFA Europa League quarterfinal second leg games. Go to sportsnet.ca and check out the broadcast schedule. And a reminder, I'll be back hosting another edition of the Soccer Central radio show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Thursday night. If you can't listen live, you can always download the show from the podcast page and iTunes afterwards. Okay, guys, it's another Soccer Central podcast in the books. I'll return next Monday with another show. Until then, cheers for listening.